morning and welcome to Fiber Hooligan. I'm your host, Benjamin Levesay, and for the next hour or so, I'd like to invite you to grab your cup of coffee, tea, or Diet Dr. Pepper, if that's your beverage of choice, and settle in for the 68th episode of Fiber Hooligan. For those of you who are wondering who the heck I am the CEO of XRX Inc., home of Knitters Magazine, XRX Books, and Stitches Expos. If you are tuning in for the first time, Fiber Hooligan is a podcast hosted by yours truly and dedicated to bringing you interviews with the best of the fiber arts world, including experts and designers in the crafts of knitting, crochet, spinning, weaving, as well as anything else that I think is interesting. I want to make sure that I thank the good folks over at Prime Publishing. Prime Publishing is the exclusive media sponsor for Fiber Hooligan, and this show is brought to you by AllFreeKnitting.com, your source for great knitting patterns. If you haven't checked them out yet, please head on over to allfreeknitting.com to get in on the fun. I want to welcome the new listeners today. Thank you for tuning in and trying out the show. I hope you enjoy it. I can't wait for us to get to know each other better. And of course, I'd like to welcome back our regular Fiber Hooligan listeners. Your ongoing support means so very much to me. Okay, my guest today is a very interesting guy. He is a teacher, a family man, a maker of things, an artist, and a runner. He currently is the Guinness World Record holder for knitting the longest scarf, 12 feet, while running a marathon, which he did in Kansas City last October. Coupled with a great deal of skill and endurance, he credits his choice in using Lion Brand's Hometown USA as a factor in his amazing accomplishment. Lion Brand is sponsoring him in the New York City Marathon on November 2nd, 2014, and he is using this as a means to also raise awareness and funds for Alzheimer's research, care, and support. I am speaking, of course, of David Babcock, the knitting runner. David joins us this morning from Warrensburg, Missouri. Good morning, David, and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Benjamin. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you on the show. Ever since I learned your story, I've just been itching to have you on the show, and you've been very patient because your schedule is crazy.
Yeah, currently it's a little bit weird.
There is a lot we have to talk about, and as you folks heard from the intro, you are the knitting runner, and I think at this point a lot of people have heard your story. We're going to talk about your story, but I wanted to just break real quickly because by the time we recorded this, you actually just ran another half marathon in Kansas City.
Yes. Yes, I did. This was just Saturday. It was a great, great run. I actually ended up beating my personal record, and this is my personal record non-knitting and running a half was 147, and this last Saturday I hit 144, and that was with knitting, finger knitting. So I feel great. You know, a lot of people ask, when you knit and run, does it slow down the running? Well, I have recent proof that I can do just as well, if not my best, when knitting while running.
Well, that's great. That's fantastic. So we should get right into the story so people understand what's going on, and then we'll kind of dissect your evolution into becoming the knitting runner and what that's all about. So let's start with a very boilerplate question. David Babcock, who are you and where did you come from?
primarily, I am a husband and father. During most of my days, I work as a college professor at the University of Central Missouri. I teach graphic design courses here. And I like to consider myself a maker of things. You know, I come from an art and design background, and I'm to the point where I don't care what you call it. As long as I'm making something, I'm a happy person.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, that sounds like just kind of a nice thing that everybody should be thinking. There's, you know, it's anti-consumer culture, which I'm a big fan of. So good for you. So that's a really good, quick, who you are, you know, quick and dirty speech. But I would like to delve into that a little bit because you are an academic. You're a teacher.
Yes, tenured associate professor. It's a great, great career, great way to spend your time. I love that it's a mentoring thing. It's a people thing. I can translate skills that I have and share those with people. It's a wonderful thing to do to perpetuate that knowledge across the generations. I love teaching.
And you're also the father of what, you know, for me
four
anyway,
kids.
Four kids and yep. You know, one of them's fairly young yet.
Yeah, the oldest is 14, the youngest is 6, almost 7. So we're at a good point where they're still, you know, playful, but not too much attitude yet.
Okay. And so, you know, I know enough about teaching to know that that's not a 40-hour week job, and there's meetings and there's all sorts of things you do. And then you're an artist as well. You've got a young family, and so you decided to, I don't know, in your copious spare time, become a marathon runner and a knitter and combine them at the same time. David, what were you thinking? I mean, what led up to this? Can you explain the evolution of what happened here?
I guess it's a middle-aged story. You know, I hit about, I think it's 38 years old, and I was feeling busy, overworked, and a little bit pudgy. And I started realizing I needed to do something to exercise more. And I started trying to run, and like a lot of people, I had knee issues. My knees were too old already and didn't like the impact. So it was a slow start. And around that same time, I needed a hat. And I found one of my students. You know, I love to support whatever they do creatively, and they were having a sale where she had knit and crocheted different hats, and so I bought a hat from her. And so those two things at the same time, middle age, wanting to exercise, got me into running, and needing a better hat got me into yarn work. So it's kind of it was both things happened around the same time in fall of 2009. So.
Well, that's a great answer. And so I understand. I understand. Again, you're a maker. You're one of those people that needs to keep his hands busy. I understand that. And I understand. Okay, it's time to refresh yourself and get a little exercise. That happens. But you know, you combine them. Is this just an inability to not multitask, or I mean.
Well, I think it's more curiosity and creativity. You know, it's as I was learning how to knit and crochet, that's it does take a lot of time. And for most people, that's, you know, sit down without anyone bothering you type of time. But you know, with busy household with kids at home, there isn't sit down and no one bother you time. And it asks a lot of your family just to take the time to go out and do a long run. So knowing that those two things were precious in time, I decided, you know, what if you could actually to kill two birds with one stone and do them at the same time? So that brought out the curiosity, and I was able to look up online and see if anyone else was this crazy, and that's where I found Susie Hewer and her original record attempt, where she had knit the longest scarf while running the London Marathon. I think it was 2007. She has a wonderful blog. We can talk about that later, but just seeing her. That she had done that, so I knew it was possible. So I thought I would have my go at it. I'd see if I could actually do those two things at once, and it worked, as crazy as it sounds.
Let's talk about your first run that you did while knitting.
It was a great failure. There's a lot of experimentation that goes into it. I had started first with crochet from that first student hat that I received. She It wasn't quite long enough, so I taught myself through YouTube how to crochet over Christmas break, and I extended the hat. And once I felt like I had a handle on crochet, I started doing things. And so that was my first love in yarn arts, and the first thing I wanted to try with running at the same time. And I had been making really small amigurumi little toys with a small hook, so that's what I brought on my first run. I had a little ball that I wound of fairly thin crochet cotton, I think like a number five or something, maybe it's a number three, and my little needle, like maybe a 2 millimeter hook, and I had it in a Ziploc bag that I tied to the string of my shorts, and I just started trying to do what I normally did, sitting still while I was running, and I started out okay, but then the holes are so small I couldn't remember if I'd just been through that hole or if it's a new hole. And eventually through the run, the yarn started getting tangled up, and it was quite a mess, and it was frustrating. But you know, that's part of starting something crazy and new.
Absolutely. No, I mean, you don't learn anything unless you fail.
No. And I love my failures. I think that's a very important thing. That's something that in my teaching in art, you know, I tell my students, look, you know, you don't draw well. That's why you're here. You're not good at designing. You should expect that. And learning to embrace those bold experiments and learn from those, that's where the magic happens.
You know, it's funny, it's a hard concept for people, lots of different people, especially in the crafting world, where if they don't get it right away, they just rubbish at it. They just
Yeah,
it
and
doesn't
that
happen.
turns off so many people, and that's depressing.
And it is, and if you go through the art world, folks, my daughter's in an art program right now, they do a thing where it's basically peer review time, where everybody puts their stuff up and the teacher takes a shot at it and everybody else takes a shot at it. And folks, you just have to get thick skin and realize it's not personal. It's
You do.
not.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is, and that things don't get better unless you can absorb that, agree with some of it, disagree with some of it, and do better. It's just the way it works.
Yeah, in the university, I do have several non-traditional students I come across, and it's always interesting. When I say non-traditional, I mean like an adult with kids or mid-career that decides to come back, and they're the ones who are most hard on themselves. They like to present themselves as, "Well, I'm older, I'm more experienced, I don't fail, I'm not a college kid," and they will try to do the right thing instead of failing and learning from that. And I have to remind them it's not about how well you can do in competition. It's about failing in the right way and being willing to make those mistakes, get those critiques, and improve your work. That'll make you a better student, a better person.
Well, I absolutely agree. And, you know, folks, you should also know too, it is possible to do everything right and still fail. And that's part of the learning process. It just
Yes.
is. It is. So it's not, failing is not a referendum on your character. It just isn't. Getting back up and trying it again is a referendum on your character. So
Yeah.
let's talk about the next run you went on.
Yeah, that would be good because I'd learned some things from those early failures. One of the things I learned was that small, tiny crochet hooks and crochet was not the best thing at that time. And I had, before I started trying to do the crochet on the run, I had learned how to knit like the next year. Like every Christmas break, I try to learn something new when I'm off from school and get into those YouTube videos. And so I had picked up knitting by that time. And so I decided, well, if crochet didn't work, maybe knitting would be a little bit better. So again, I made the mistake of trying with small needles, but still it worked fairly well. And I found that there are a couple of issues. And I think every knitter or crocheter runs through these issues, but for me it was exaggerated by the situations. So my yarn feed needed to be right. If I was fighting the yarn, it wasn't going to happen. I couldn't sit there and untangle a messed up ball. I couldn't start from an original skein of yarn. So I had to figure that out. So I think one of my first attempts was to create like a spool of yarn and attach that around my waist. And that was the first run after that with knitting with the spool. It was also kind of weird because it started unspooling itself too much. So I had too much feed on my yarn. And I had a series of experiments. I think I detail this on my blog. Haven't looked at it in a while. But once I finally figured out how to get just enough free play on my feed, but without too much bouncing around, slightly larger needles so I wasn't fighting to see the holes, then it started to come together. And it actually became a what I hope people understand is a relaxing, distracting, productive part of my running.
So no, but this time you were actually knitting and crocheting quite a bit at home and in meetings and things like this. This has now
Yes.
become something that, you know, now you're doing, not just with running, but you're doing this.
Yeah, if I could steal a moment, I would do it. And it is kind of stealing time, middle of a faculty meeting, a church meeting, while traveling somewhere in the car or anything. It was good to have something to do.
Okay. And I know you love the little amigurumi, little dolls. So you're making these for your kids, or are they liking them? Are they interested in this?
Yeah. I'm still competing with Legos. They love Legos. So I'm kind of number two, and I hope maybe someday I'll be number one, maybe when they're older. But that's one of those magical things I think as a dad that I can do is make something that my kids enjoy, something that my kids think is cool. And they remain, for the most part, dad's toys. Sometimes I will give them something special I make just for their birthday. But I have a big bin of them. and I'll let them take out the bin and play with them. And, but the end of playtime, it's I've got to collect them all to keep them somewhat safe. And sometimes that means pulling them out of potted plants and other places where they're under laundry on the floor and things. So I'm hoping that as they get older, they'll be able to play with them again or pass them on to their kids, my grandkids. That's, you know, that kind of dad fantasy that you're somewhat relevant and they like what you make.
They probably will, and you got good odds. You got four. If one out of four,
Yeah, that's
that's
why
all
you
it
have
takes.
four, so at
That's
least
why.
one of them will still love you.
That's right. All right. I just wanted to make the evolution. By now, you're really doing this craft all the time. And so this was not your last run. So what happened next? What was
No.
your next run?
Well, I did have a few more failures too. There is the run that I fell and scraped up my hands, and it seems like every interview I get, there's this morbid question of, have you fallen? And when you fall, do you get a knitting needle through the chest? And from experience, I know no, that did not happen. The needles are horizontal, so they just kind of fell on my hands. And I had been doing regularly several runs, not every time I ran would I knit, but it was part of my routine. And my next run, official run, I guess you could say, how do I say this? I guess it's better to back up to a guy that ran while his knees hurt, and then slowly evolving to someone who figured out how to run without disability. And then deciding, well, maybe I could actually do a race. And it is, I think, November of 2009, where I was on a student field trip in New York City, and I saw the New York City Marathon. And that was a very emotional experience for someone who just started running to see a marathon, to see all sorts of body types, all sorts of abilities, giving their all, doing their best. All ages, I can imagine myself in their situation, wondering, well, could I do what these amazing people are doing? And if you know the New York City Marathon, the crowd support that's there, everyone cheering for everyone else like their family, I wanted a piece of that. And so that pushed me to do better with my running. And I'd run my first half marathon, I think was 2011. And I did okay there, not knitting, of course. And then the next year, 2012, I ran my first marathon, not knitting. And I did great. I did under a 4-hour marathon, and I felt really accomplished. And I felt like I had met my goals running. I had become that person I saw in the New York City Marathon. And I thought I was done. But then my brother-in-law decided that he wanted to run a marathon in 2013. And so he kind of recruited me back into running to run with him. And for that race, I had done a practice run with him, and he was really slow compared to what I had done. And I thought, there's no way, having done a personal fast marathon, that I could survive. So what am I going to do? I thought, well, I've been doing this knitting and running. Could I actually do that during the marathon with him? And I thought, yeah, this would be a perfect way to run slower and not worry about, just relax, do some knitting while I kept him company, and finish the marathon. So that was 2013, Kansas City Marathon. And once I decided I would do the knitting on that run, it was time to get into serious research mode. So I went back and studied what Susie Hewer had done for the Guinness World Record for longest scarf knit whilst running a marathon. And I tried, looking at her blog pictures and things to figure out what all was involved. I contacted Guinness to put in an application for the attempt, and I started training. And it was hard figuring out how to do something big and impressive, because up to that point, I'd just been knitting really small things, still manageable little water bottle bags or hats while I was running. And my first attempts there were very frustrating. Everything I knit was taking too long. It wasn't going to be long or impressive. And it took me until September before I heard back from Guinness and heard specifics on the record. And it's pretty interesting what those specifics are. They require that you, well, first of all, the length of the run, it has to be under 6 hours. And under 6 hours is still a really slow marathon. So that's why, running with the brother-in-law, that made sense. And then it's because the longer you run, the more time you have to knit. And then the other thing was the needle sizes. You had to use two needles, conventional needles, US size 15. The 10 millimeter needles were the biggest you could do. And it needed to be 30 stitches across and the whole scarf in garter stitch. So once I finally had that specific bit of information, I was able to train with that information to figure out how it would work. And my first attempts were just, even with that, they were too tight, too small, too short, too time-consuming, until I finally figured out that I could loosen the gauge on those needles and figure it out. So I had trained, I'd figured it out. I was ready to go, and going into that race, I was confident that it was going to work.
We had a lot of support from Susie. I there you are. You're in touch with her. You're learning what she's doing, and basically looking to break her record too. It's also important to note that as part of what you had to do for this, you had to have like a knitting monitor, and some other people that like were along the run with you. And it just so happens they're mutual friends of ours. I believe Cindy Craig was a part of your team.
Yes, Cindy Craig and Tracy Bunkers.
Tracy Bunkers, yes. And great folks, by the way, that
Yeah.
do this. And I think I've had a little bit of experience with Guinness before. And
Yes.
it seems like it's probably harder to deal with Guinness than to run the marathon.
Oh, it is. And having done the training and knowing that I could knit and run, I felt good about that. But I was having the hardest time preparing for Guinness. As you mentioned, they require witnesses. And the witnesses have to be professionals within the field. And so I sent out emails everywhere I could think of. Who is or what is a knitting professional? And are you one? And can you come and help me? And the responses that I got, a lot of them were helpful. And of course, both Cindy Craig and Tracy Bunkers, they responded, and they were excited. So that was fun. So that was difficult, but thankfully, through their help, I got that figured out. Some of the other things that they required was that I videotaped the whole thing. So I ended up buying one of those GoPro action cameras and finally figured out that I could mount that on my chest, and that actually ended up being helpful, that during my training runs I was able to record video, and that was a big plus for the news media to be able to play that back. And they required that I have a witness with me the whole time that could verify my knitting. It's like, well, how am I going to do that? So I went on Ravelry.com, went to the message boards, and begged there for someone who could help me out. And I luckily a woman, Rachel Brudnicki, she is a Ravelry user, and she was already planning on running the Kansas City Marathon. And she saw my post, and she reached out, and I was able to convince her through some communication there to actually run with me at the slower time that I was going to run. And she was amazing. She was running with me the whole marathon, watching every key point where I changed yarn or counted stitches. So that was an amazing witness to be with me the whole time there. And that same Ravelry message board, that wonderful community of knitters, that's how I first got in direct contact with Susie Hewer. She had also seen my post, and she wrote back to me and through the site and wished me luck. And she was happy to hear that I was doing it. I had mentioned in that blog post that I was going to do it for Alzheimer's, and that made a big difference to her, that I was trying to continue her legacy of supporting a charity while doing that.
That I'm glad that you brought that up because that's the next thing that I wanted to segue into, which is okay, we understand the what, we
Right.
even understand the how. I think it's really important that the Fiber Hooligan listeners understand the why. And this is something that you very thoughtfully did research on and made made it something that it's that you understood, so that it was personal. And if
Yes.
you wouldn't mind, I'd very much like you to talk a bit about the why here with our audience.
Yeah, the why actually divides into two parts. One is do it because I can, and creativity, but which is an important message. But the why of doing it for awareness and fundraising for Alzheimer's is something I really want to make sure that people hear. And it often gets kind of buried in the news. Susie Heuer, when she had been doing fundraising for Alzheimer's Research UK for many years, and she was looking in conjunction with the marathon, the London Marathon, of what she could do. And she thought of, you know, I could run in costume, or just, you know, anything that she could do to bring fundraising dollars to Alzheimer's. And a friend had told her, you know, why don't you just, you know, act your age and stay home and do your knitting. And that sparked her to connect knitting and running with the marathon. And when I'd read her story about her mother and how she had gotten into the fundraising, I was touched. And I thought, there's no way that I could attempt to break her record and take away from that monumental fundraising campaign. And I'm not a great fundraiser. You know, I have a lot to learn, and people like Susie are great examples. But I thought, if I'm going to be getting media attention for this, it's got to go to something other than myself. I don't need the personal attention. And so being able to run for Alzheimer's has been a good thing. It's been a learning process. And I think, you know, you'd mentioned connecting with people and preparing for the New York Marathon, sponsored by Lion Brand, I've been able to use their blog, their website, to help connect with people. And I think one of the most successful things that we've done, I have a post on their blog where I basically tell people what I'm doing, and I offer to trade one of my scarves that I knit while training in exchange for their story about Alzheimer's. And the response to that was just amazing. The premise was, you know, we believe that there are knitters and crocheters out there that are caregivers for people with Alzheimer's, or people with Alzheimer's who are knitters and crocheters. And I wanted to hear those stories. And the stories you hear that I read back there, they're heartbreaking to see the amazing, the tragedy and the work that goes into caring for someone, and seeing how they're lost. And these people that a very common thread in the stories was my mother or my grandmother taught me how to knit or crochet and did wonderful, beautiful things until the day when she couldn't anymore, where she forgot, she lost the ability to use her hands, the ability to remember the stitches. And these daughters, most often, having some of that legacy of knitting and crochet, and then being able to share that back with that parent who has lost so much. And stories like knitting by their bedside and having that parent just love looking at the yarn, or holding that ball of yarn for them, or enjoying the clack of the needles or the feel of the yarn. And these daughters being able to give back to their mothers some of what they'd lost already. And having those stories in my head and my heart as I run, it gives you purpose. You know, it gives you a reason to be in pain and uncomfortable, and a reason to do something good.
Well, of course, I remember when your post went up on the blog, Lion Brand also sent out a newsletter. And we're going to talk about your ongoing relationship with Lion Brand a little bit, but I was also touched. There was, again, a request for stories, and people commented. They're wonderful to read. One of the things I think is classy about you is that the last time I checked, you had replied personally to every single story with
that's the least I could do. I want them to know that they're read, and I receive them, and I'm so thankful for that.
Yeah, but it's classy, and it's not at all. It's not at all, oh, thanks for that. You know, you've taken the time and you've addressed them. And, you know, I could tell that some of them, you know, really got to you. And you and I talked before when we were getting ready for this interview about mm-hmm. the caregiver and how focus needs to be, you know, put on the caregiver. And I think you've done a good job with these stories in going there.
Yeah, and the stories, the fun thing about this is they're not just for me. They're in a blog. They're in a public place. Anyone can go there and read these stories. And I hope politicians are reading these stories. We've got to get them to them somehow. I'm the idea is I'm trading a scarf for these, but I want to get people to trade legislation for stories. If we can get people aware of the huge burden that is on people, I mean, it's a burden of love, but it takes away so many of the resources that people have. And the Alzheimer's organization, Alzheimer's Association in the U.S., they do a lot. And a lot of people make the mistake of not contacting the organization, not being aware of what resources are out there for them. And I love running for them as a charity because I know they're doing a lot. It's not just about finding a cure for Alzheimer's. It's about finding a workable societal system that can help us through this.
Well, I mean, again, kudos, and it's the right why to do this kind of thing. And it just goes to character that you spent the time understanding and learning, contacting the right people, and getting the support you're going to get. Now, before we move on to what happened with Lion Brand next, we never did finish your run. So you eventually finished this, your big run.
The
Yes, we
record
never
run, yeah.
you finished your run, and you had by the time you were done a scarf
Yeah.
and how did you do, and what was your time?
Oh, it was a great run. The marathon time, I had to be under 6 hours. So I did 5 hours, I think it was 53 minutes. So that was great. And right there, I beat Susie on the time as well. I think her time was 5 hours 58. It's kind of a funny balance of run as slow as you can, but still before the 6 hours. And the final scarf, Cindy and Tracy and another gentleman who did the measurement, Jim Jostin, they stretched it out. I didn't want to be involved. I didn't want to be artificially stretching that thing long or wide. And it measured 12 feet, 1 3/4 inches, nearly double Susie's latest record there. And that was a great moment to see it all spread out. It's about a little under 2 feet wide as well. So you can imagine the size of the scarf. It's not practical. And I have some fun photos of my whole family holding the scarf in a train because it really does take a family to hold this thing. But that was a great day.
Well, that's very cool. Now, out of this, and I understand that Susie was also happy for your success
Yes.
as well, very gracious lady. And out of this, the word got out that you've used Lion Brand. Lion Brand heard about this, and they were very
Yeah.
excited about it.
Yeah, they had originally reached out to me. They had seen the news articles, and they sent me an email not too long after saying, "David, we heard about your run. That's great. We wanted to congratulate you." And so I emailed them back, and I said, "You know what? Lucky for you, I used your yarn. I'd used their Hometown USA, and part of my selection. I don't have a little yarn store here in small town rural Warrensburg." But the Hometown USA was accessible at my local big box store. I was able to get it, and I wanted bright colors that would look good on the run, and Lion Brand delivered there. So when I told them that, they were super excited, because it's giving is kind of a funny relationship. But if you can give corporate America something that they can use, then they can help. They can help. With the charity, they can help with the publicity, and I think people, Lion Brand in particular, they're looking to connect with the community. They want to help, and all the knitters and crocheters out there, we just need to give them something that they can latch on to.
Well, and they've been very easy for you to work with, and out of this whole genesis, you've got another marathon coming up.
Yes, Lion Brand generously offered to sponsor me. The more I run, the more they have that they can share. And so we decided on the New York City Marathon. Part of its location, part of its high profile. And for me, if you remember that back, that's the first marathon I ever watched. And that was that moment where I asked, could I actually do this, what I see other people doing? So that's settled, and we're looking at November the 2nd on Sunday, just 2 weeks from today, where I'll be running the New York City Marathon. And And with that, there's some interesting challenges. As we know, unfortunately, we're in a high security time right now. We've been in for a while. And the New York City Police Department, they're doing a great job. And they have a huge job with that many runners. So there are restrictions on that race about what you can do. And unfortunately for me, one of those restrictions is no tools. So, and I'd gone back and forth trying to communicate with the New York Roadrunners Association to try to figure out what can we do? No knitting needles, no crochet hooks, not allowed. And I really believe that, as they say, the mother of invention is necessity, or I guess you could say security in this case. And I had to figure out a way to do without the tools and just use my fingers. So initially, I looked up finger knitting, and of course, there's the finger looming method. And no, that wouldn't cut it. That wouldn't. I can't have. That's not going to be visually interesting enough or engaging enough. So I developed my own method of finger knitting, where I use my fingers just as needles, where the loops go directly on my fingers, and with my stubby little hands, I can easily get 12 to 15 stitches on my index fingers. And then I just pass the loops. Knitting is, and this is part of what it's sad about how people get frustrated with knitting and don't do it. But if you understand that it's just pulling up a loop or pushing through a loop from another loop and then finding somewhere to place it till you get to it again, that's all that knitting is. So I just pull the yarn through the loop, put it back on the other finger. I can knit left to right and then back again. I figured out how to knit and how to purl. I don't have to turn the work. So the concept is there where we're ready. I can do this. I can run the New York City Marathon with yarn, not a lot of yarn, and I can do it without tools, and we can do something impressive there.
I wanted to just step back real quickly so the point can be made that this is not something that you resent about the police
Oh no.
department and security. This
I
is something that
totally
you feel good
respect it.
about, and you feel good
Yes.
about because they're taking care of you too.
And a marathon is that way, where we don't you don't run a marathon because it's easy or fun or convenient. It's about the challenge. And so in a way, I'm thankful for the police department in giving me a challenge. And I totally want to support people feeling safe and protected and orderly. And the part of the funny story of this is David Blumenthal, the president of Lion Brand, he had offered to go to bat to fight the police department on that, and to make an argument that knitting needles aren't weapons. Let us be free. He was willing to do that for me, but I said no. This is good. We want to show people that we're cooperative, and we support the New York Roadrunners Association and the NYPD, and we love that they're letting me do this.
Well, that's very cool. There are so many stories of knitters getting their needles taken away from them on airplanes that this can be a sensitive subject. So I'm glad that you're going, but this is something extra. So I totally understand your point, and I think you're right on. It also led to a huge opportunity. And as I understand it, while you're out in New York, you're going to be teaching a little finger knitting with your method.
Yes. Yeah, and that's in some ways, as an educator, that's one of my favorite parts of this, is that I have something else that I can contribute, something that I can teach back to people, so that when they are stuck without needles, that they have something that they can do. And we know how the finger looming method, that's popular with kids and people, and the amazing response to arm knitting. It's really not that different in that you're also using a non-traditional tool to make your knitting. And if people can latch on to this, it's frustrating that the term finger knitting is already out there. So getting people even to be aware that this is something that's an option, it's not as catchy and new as the idea of arm knitting. And I've had opportunity already to teach different people. I did a walk to end Alzheimer's in Topeka with a group, the Yak and Yarn Yarn Store. And afterwards, we met, and I taught the ladies that were there how to do the finger knitting, and they were generally positive that they said it wasn't as hard as they thought it would be, and it was interesting. I don't think they're totally willing to or ready to scrap their needles, but they did enjoy learning that. So in New York, there will be some events that we have scheduled where I can interact with people, talk about it, teach them, and I'm working on getting some more tutorial videos and materials to share.
I have to imagine that while you're there in New York City, that you'll be doing some kind of in-store event at Lion Brand's beautiful store.
Yes, there will be a talk, official talk in the studio. It's great space. I love how it's a collaborative space. People can go and be mentored, learn things, talk to other knitters and crocheters. So that will be the I guess more formal in the store thing, but we'll also be doing a walk in the park, a walk and knit thing. And I've been telling people that I promise not to run you ragged or make you sweat, but the idea is that knitting can be a mobile activity as well. It can be something that doesn't have to be passive, doesn't have to be sitting down. And most people that are interested, I recommend walking with knitting as opposed to jumping straight into running with knitting. There are safety concerns, of course, the biggest being just being aware of your surroundings. And I'm amazed by people that say that they can knit and watch TV or a movie. I don't know that I'm totally there, but the knitting. It's fun to think about it coming out of the private living room and into the public. I know a lot of people that it can be very nerve-wracking, just the knit in public events that they have. But being able to contribute to your general health by walking while knitting, being a little bit more public and open about it, being willing to take your knitting or crochet on the go, even if you're sitting in public transportation, it's a great opportunity to share.
So this leads into kind of another interesting thing that we talked about once before, which is your view on stereotypes and, getting
Yes.
the knitting out and, whether, and I know it can be kind of boring, folks, to talk about a man who knits, but, I know, David, that you have real strong thoughts about stereotypes, what they do, and kind of how we manage them.
And one of the things I like about most of the media attention that I've gotten is that it's not, oh, look, here's a man who knits. It's, look, here's a person who knit while running a marathon. And I hoping people don't see it as, well, because I'm a man, I have to, not only can I knit like women do, but I can do more. Yeah, Susie Huer had already done that. She'd already done the amazing. So it wasn't about, this is what men can do different than women. And so I like that part. I have had times where people have seen me in public where I'm just, sitting and knitting, and they'll say things that it's kind of funny how it knitting's become a gendered thing where it shouldn't be that way. And some people are still amazed by seeing a man knit or crochet, but it's not a bad amazement. They're positive, and it's in a way it's I am the one when they see me that it helps them reassess their stereotype. And I think there's a lot of stereotypes, not just men versus women, but there's also age stereotypes too. I think a lot of people, including myself before I started, the idea that you're a middle-aged or grandma knitting and crocheting. And when I read a lot of these stories about people with Alzheimer's, the truth is there's so many things fighting older people, whether it's arthritis or other dexterity loss, where old age is not the time necessarily to count on being able to learn how to knit and crochet. You need to start young. And I've had the opportunity after the record to talk with young students in some of my children's classrooms, and I want to bring them that message. That it's not about whether you're, a boy or a girl or older, young. And it is fun to see these young kids that are starting to be excited about knitting and crochet and seeing that it's something that's relevant for them. That you don't have to be a certain age or a certain gender to get into knitting or crochet. And the opportunities that are there for everyone when you pick up an art form, you pick up a craft, The advantages of dexterity, the advantages of creativity, the pride in being able to make something that you made instead of bought. There's just so much value there. The ability to find a productive way to use your time instead of on an electronic device or watching some sort of media, but being able to be a producer, being a maker, that's something that everyone needs to be a part of. And I hope, I recognize that there people have different preferences. I can't say that I'm perfectly at home in a knitting group with all the ladies. I, even though there are stereotypes, there's everyone has their own reservations. Everyone's different about how they engage with the craft, and we have to respect that and make sure that the umbrella, when we talk about crafts, is large enough to include everyone, all genders, all ages, all abilities, all social interests. Some people are terrified of letting someone else see what they're working on, and other people are just hungry to share what they're making with someone.
I agree with that. One of the things that I've seen about our community is that it is social. It's great that there are places, whether it's a knit night or a yarn store or virtually on Ravelry or a big show or Lion Brand Studio for that matter, where people can come together and share. It's also kind of important that we realize that you're not required to share, folks. I mean, if this is a private little thing that you want to do it, be at home and not show everybody, you don't have to. You still can be part of the community.
There are a lot of funny parallels between running and knitting and crochet, just in that community sense. My attitude when I'm at the gym, everyone belongs. It's not about showing off your muscles and how already toned you are. If someone walks in there who is, for better lack of a word, in serious need of gymnasts, maybe they're overweight or they don't look like they move very fast, I'm happy to see them there because they're trying. They're taking those first steps, and I don't want to be a gym stalker. I don't go up and pat someone on the back, but I hope there's that sense of community that when you know that someone's starting out, they're doing their best, you want to support that. And in the craft world, it's the same way, where it's not a competitive thing, in the same way that a marathon, at least at my level, is not a competitive thing. You want to cheer for each other. You want to clap when you cross the finish line. So, when you see someone casting off, that's a moment to cheer, because they've accomplished something. And in the same way that I hope that we embrace our failures, our mistakes, and it is a lot of fun to laugh with other people at your drop stitches and tangled things. But that's the kind of community that helps people move forward. That's the kind of community that helps someone who's afraid to do something to step up and do it, failures or not, knowing that we're all cheering for them.
Well, that's exactly the right way of looking at it. Now, your story, and I know that it's not about you, but you understand the nature of making it about you enough so that the media can get a hold of these things and positive stuff can be done. Of course, Lion Brand has embraced you, and you've got a great blog out there. I think it's The Knitting Runner is the name of your blog. And on your blog, I wanted to make sure that, because I want an action item out of this for the Fiber Hooligan listeners. On your blog, that I think you can't go very far without seeing where you can donate for Alzheimer's research. And so, Fiber Hooligans, I'm going to, really ask you to go up and look. First of all, go up and look. There's some great material. There's some great stories up there. If you like something, if you like anything, donate $1, donate $5. Just go up there and take a look at it. If you think that this is cool, if you enjoyed it, if it put a smile on your face, then donate. But first, just go look. Because it's a great blog. You've done a nice job with it.
Well, there's actually a few places. Knittingrunner.com is where I have the website, and the blog is just a small part of that. The blog address is, I think, theknittingrunner.blogspot.com, but it's all contained within knittingrunner.com as a website. And definitely that hopefully is the message prominently displayed that you see through the website, knittingrunner.com, is that you will make a difference. I do need help with people donating, not just so I look good, but that's what this is about. so that people have an opportunity to engage with the story, something that, in my philosophy, reminds you that you care. Because I know people care about this. It's just we forget. We get busy, and finding that window to spark someone's fancy, give them a funny story, an interesting thing, and at the same time remind them that they can make a difference. That's the important thing. For people who are curious, I also have my do not staple. blogspot.com where I show some of my amigurumi toys and hats and things that I do, you know, personally. But it's great that Lion Brand, their blog is a great way to connect, and they have links there that go directly to the fundraising as well.
They do. And you and I were talking about the nature of how you like this to work, as opposed to, you know, but you'd rather have more people and smaller contributions than a lot, just because you want the connection with people.
Yeah, and you know, when someone makes a donation, they become an advocate. They say, you know, look, I saw this thing. I stepped up to the plate. You know, we've all heard about the ice bucket challenge and how popular that is, but hopefully people feel that same kind of challenge to their peers. That they can engage with something and say, you know, look, this was worth it to me. It's worth it to you as well. And it is a numbers game, not a money numbers, but a people numbers. Because if we can get enough people talking about these issues, talking with our politicians, because it doesn't seem to be a priority with politicians now, but we can make it that way. And if the whole craft community stepped up and said, you know, look, this matters, then we can make that happen.
I think it's a great idea. And, you know, Fiber Hooligans, again, I'm gonna ask you to just go look at the material online. I think you're going to love it. I think that wouldn't it be great if you, my very loyal listeners, would go out and even just put $1 in to this thing, just so he knows that we're running with him on this thing. I'd really appreciate that. So I love your stuff up there. Great site.
You did
a nice
you.
Job with it. And I haven't checked out your Amigurumi blog yet. I'll have to do that.
Yeah, please do. It's a lot of fun. You know, I think every crafter has their fun thing. I like to make hats. I've never made a sweater. I'm totally intimidated by an Afghan, but I love that little crochet. I love how portable it is. I love that I can be creative. I love that I can share with my kids, and some adults actually like the toys too.
Yeah, I sent you a link to a site. I hope you got that.
I did, but I've been so busy I haven't looked it up yet. But I'm excited to look at that. And you know, I love finding kindred spirits like that.
Yeah, she's I sent him the link to freshstitches.com, that's Stacy Trock's site, because that's her thing too. And I know you're gonna love her stuff. And she's just fun too. She's also somebody that I would call a maker.
Yes.
Or I think she defines herself as an urban homesteader, which I just love. I love that.
I know we talked about this before, but that idea of how you define yourself, it is intimidating even to call myself a runner or to call myself a knitter, because I know there's so many people out there that are better, that have put in the serious hours that I hope to yet be able to achieve. But there's just such a pleasure in making things and not worrying about whether it's what someone else would make or if it meets someone else's standards.
Yeah. Well, and it doesn't have to be any more complicated than that. I mean, it really doesn't. And, you know, you'll find folks just by the doing. Over time, the doing will get better, and you'll get better at what you do. It's just about putting in the time and, you know, and then also giving yourself a break when you don't automatically succeed in the first 15 seconds. That's, you know, a big, big part of it. So it's great. And of course, on behalf of the Fiber Hooligans, I want to wish you the best of luck out on your marathon. I know you're going to do great. I know you're going to inspire people. And we're going to be watching you.
Good.
We're going to have you back on the thing. So we're coming down close to the end of the interview. And I wanted to ask, do you have any shout-outs that you'd like to make while we're on the air?
Yes, definitely a shout-out to Susie Hewer. You know, she still continues to be my hero. She's still, you know, great fundraiser, a great woman. She continues to run. She is having a hard time with arthritis and doesn't always get to do the knitting while running that she would like to, but she's still very active, and I'm very thankful for her. My family, definitely. I couldn't do this without their support. The time away from them to be running and just their excitement. I love that my 14-year-old thinks I'm actually cool. That's a rare treat. And Lion Brand as well, they have been a great sponsor. I love that they're about connecting community. It's not just a business for them, but they know who we are, and they're trying to give us support and help us connect with each other, and I'm really thankful for them.
Those are good answers, and I especially agree, want to agree with you about Lion Brand. They're a big company, they're a successful company, but people often forget they're a family company, and they do a lot of good. They really do. So, kudos, Blumenthal's and gang.
Yeah.
Well done. All right, final question. I give everybody fair warning on this, and I know you well enough to know that you actually have a pretty good answer. Do you have any final words of wisdom or advice that you'd like to give the Fiber Hooligan audience today while you're on the air?
Yeah, and I think some of this has already come out. But I really hope for a message of empowerment. And a lot of it has to do with how we define ourselves, how we judge ourselves. We're afraid to have people laugh at us when we try something new and we fail at it. And frankly, some of the things we have an idea to do are embarrassing. They are laughable, but that's not a reason to not do them. And I really hope that people will step out of their comfort zone and embrace their mistakes, embrace their failures. The only reason I got into knitting and crochet is because I'm hungry to learn something new. I love picking up a new skill. And I've yet to do quilting. I've gone into tatting a little bit, but there's no boundaries to curiosity of what can I do? What can I try out? What can I fail at? And some of those things stick and some of them don't, but being willing to step out there and do it. And at the same time, try to connect with a cause. When you're running a race, it's a great opportunity to connect with some sort of fundraising. But you don't have to run a race to connect what you love to do, to connect your craft with doing some good. And I know I've heard of many things people do, whether it's knitting items directly for homeless people or blankets for babies. There are a lot of ways to connect. They're out there, and you just need to find them and share with people. It's about community, and it's not just a craft. It's a community building. It's a service, and it's passing that legacy from parent to child. Teaching what you know, teaching what you love, and spreading it as far as we can.
That's a pretty great answer, David. So, wow, that's very well done as a message of empowerment, and it's broad. It's exactly what people should be thinking about in terms of how they occupy their day and how they're what they're doing with their lives. It's a just a great thing that you just said. I listen to you over and over with the other things you've done. To me, you always seem like primarily a teacher.
Yes, I was just going to invite you to enroll here.
You seem to be always finding that teaching moment and putting it out there. And it just feels to me like the running and the knitting and the advocacy are just, an extension of your teaching.
I hope so.
Well done. Anyway, I want to I've taken up so much of your time. I really appreciate your
Oh, it's
giving me
been a
some time
pleasure.
because I know how busy you are. You got to get back to classes yet today. I want to wish you the best of luck on your marathon. We'll be sitting there watching you as best we can. We'll see what kind of media coverage they get for it, and we'll be checking back in on you and watching the Lion Brand sites as well. And so good luck with that. I hope you have a glorious week.
Thank you, Benjamin.
You take care and bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
That was David Babcock, the Knitting Runner. You can keep up with what David is doing at knittingrunner.com. And I'm going to encourage all of you fiber hooligans to get up there and see what he's talking about. And again, if you're interested, if you find it inspiring, I'd like to ask you to donate $1. And then I'd like to ask you to come back to the Fiber Hooligans Ravelry group and tell us what you thought of what David is doing. So again, you can keep up with what David is doing at knittingrunner.com, and that's one you're going to want to bookmark. Our dear friend Tammy Burke is swamped out this week, and so that we will not be having a State of the Hooligan segment, but we hope to have her back with us next week. Tammy, of course, also administers our Facebook page and our Ravelry group. For those of you who may have missed anything on this podcast, I invite you to join us in one of our groups. Tammy does such a great job of making sure we answer questions and provide links and follow-up to anything you may have heard on the show. Next week, my guest will be my dear friend and dye pot goddess, Jeannie Randolph, owner of Fiesta Yarns. Jeannie has been the owner of Fiesta Yarns for over 12 years and is the driving force behind the amazing colors that her company produces. If you've ever picked up a skein of La Boheme, you'll know what I mean. She is also one of the most accomplished marketing minds that you could ever meet. And besides that, she's a dear, dear friend. I hope you'll tune in next week when I talk to one of the best people I have ever met. I also want to make sure that you know that I'm eager to hear from you. You can email me questions, recommendations, critiques, and feedback at benjamin@fiberhooligan.com. And that includes suggestions for guests or cool things you'd like Tammy to talk about in her segment. If you want to email Tammy directly, you can do so at tammy@fiberhooligan.com. I don't promise to respond to every email or message, but I do promise to do my best to read them all. If you ask a really great question or have an inspired idea, I may even read your email on the podcast. If you're following us on iTunes, we have moved. You can find us now at fiberhooligan.com/iTunes. And since we're at a new channel up there on iTunes, I'd appreciate it if you'd leave a comment if you like the show. I'd like to thank Prime Publishing and AllFreeKnitting.com for their sponsorship of Fiber Hooligan. I'd also like to thank my editor, Christine Weir, as well as Simone, Caitlin, Chris, Keith, Stuart, and the rest of the gang at Prime Publishing for all their help. I'd like to thank my guest today, David Babcock, for being so gracious with his time and being such an inspirational person. I'd like to thank Tammy Burke for everything she does on and off the show. And of course, I'd like to thank all of you for listening. Well, that's our show, Fiber Hooligans. As we slide on out of here today, I'd like to wish you all a glorious week. Remember, the only thing better than being creative is being kind to each other. The good news, you can do both. Thank you for spending this time with us. We'll see you next week for another edition of Fiber Hooligans.